Free Talk Live. You can take control of the airwaves. Dial in toll free. Bring up what you want at 800-259-9231. That's the SACL CAI toll free line. And you can join us on our website at freetalklive.com. We give you the features on the site. They're completely free. So enjoy those on us. Once again, that's freetalklive.com. And joining you tonight, it's Ian.
And Mark.
So we are actually starting things out here with a special guest. And then coming up later, we'll hear from the folks out in Orlando, hopefully, because there's just some horrible, horrible news that has occurred down there. Well, maybe it's to be expected, but some of you might find it shocking. We'll get to that here in a little bit. But first, Erica is on the line. Erica Schmitter, am I correct?
No, Chenoweth.
Oh, Chenoweth. I'm thinking of the guy down in Orlando that was thrown in jail. Talk about him later. Erica Chenoweth is with us. She is the author of a book, which you've been paging through there, Mark, Why Civil Resistance Works, and a co-author, actually, co-authored with Maria Stephan. Erica, are you there?
I'm here.
Sorry about the last name mix-up there. Thanks for coming on Free Talk Live here tonight. So Mark was raving about this book to me, and he said we've got to have Erica on with us. And you know, this isn't a you may not know this, but this isn't really an interview show. We take callers about whatever they want to talk about, etc. And occasionally we'll have an interview, and it has to be something really special. So your book must be pretty special.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Yeah,
it's remarkably, it's not very often that I'm chasing after authors asking them to be on Free Talk Live, but I did do that.
Right, normally they pound on your door.
Yeah,
and they want
and
you
I
to.
Tell them no. And
right.
But this book, I felt, you know, first off, the title caught my attention, Why Civil Resistance Works, The Strategic Logic of Nonviolent Conflict. Now, we on Free Talk Live talk about this kind of thing on a pretty regular basis, and it seems like there's been some buzz going around. There was a New York Times article that came out that kind of said something similar to this. It didn't obviously wasn't as researched as your book, but could you make the just sort of the underlying argument for the book?
Sure. What we're arguing here is that when we take a look at the history of violent insurgency versus nonviolent resistance from 1900 to 2006, what we see is that the historical record shows that nonviolent resistance is strategically superior to armed conflict. And what we mean by that is that when we just look at the categories of regime change campaigns or anti-occupation or self-determination movements, nonviolent campaigns have succeeded about twice as often as violent insurgency. So
that's a pretty big track record.
Yeah, that's twice as often.
It's huge.
Now,
yeah,
what can you describe nonviolent civil resistance to me, just to make sure that we're clear on what that is?
Right. So nonviolent, or what we're calling civil resistance here, is a method of prosecuting conflict in which unarmed civilians are actively applying sanctions or withdrawing cooperation from their government. So it's kind of like civil disobedience en masse.
So boycotts, strikes, protests, organized non-cooperation, all these things, many of them would be considered, are considered illegal, right?
Exactly, right.
Okay, so it's not that people are acting within the law because, well, the bureaucrats and politicians will write whatever they want into law. It's that they're acting outside of the law. They're just not generally picking up arms.
Well, they're acting on what's right, or what they consider to be right, without using violence, is what it sounds like to me.
Yeah, so there's usually some kind of unifying objective there. Say they're feeling oppressed by the regime, or they are being occupied by a foreign power, or something like that. They're using organized methods of conflict. Really, they're nonviolent methods like strikes, boycotts, protests. Those are weapons that can be applied against an opponent, but. Most people think of weapons as violent, and we're making the claim here that there's this whole dimension of conflict that's largely ignored because it doesn't appear in the media as much, or it doesn't make a huge blast or whatever, but it's much more effective.
So now when you're talking about regime change, does it result in the fall of the dictator, or does it result in sort of better conditions for the slaves?
Yeah, so that's actually pretty interesting. We weren't sure that we were going to find anything on that. it does typically result in the fall of dictators, but the thing that was so striking is that in one chapter of the book, we report these findings that when nonviolent resistance has occurred in a country, not even just when it actually succeeds, but just occurs in a country, that country is much more likely to transition into a more kind of democratic country in the long run than one in which a violent insurgency has taken place.
Define democratic for me.
Yeah, so we use a very conventional set of measures for that because we're kind of talking to a political science audience with that metric. But what we're looking at is just a standard political science definition, which is that there are fairly representative institutions, that there is popular contestation of power, that is, there's a competitive elections where people aren't actually going to be intimidated into voting a certain way. There's some civil liberties that are broadly enjoyed. There's separation of powers. So it's kind of a standard definition, even though, of course, it has problems.
Sure. I mean, you know, it's difficult to know. There are a lot of quote-unquote democracies out there, and they do tend to span the gamut from free to mildly, oppressive. But most of them are not sitting at the bottom of the list as far as oppressive regimes. And I don't think there's ever been that I can think of, a war from a democracy to a democracy. Like, there's no democracy on democracy's wars. At least they're very unlikely.
How far back, by the way, Erica, does this book kind of look at as far as nonviolent movements, civil resistance movements?
Yeah, we go all the way back to 1900.
Okay.
And we're looking at well over 300 cases. And we use some statistical techniques to analyze those. But, the book presents them in a fairly summary way so that it's accessible.
Now, one of the things that I found very interesting in this is you're stating that if you take all of the nonviolent versus all of the violent conflicts between 1900 and 2006, so that's over 106 years, that violent conflicts are half as effective as nonviolent conflicts. Is that the statement?
Yes, exactly.
Now, also, you make another statement, which I think is extraordinarily important. Like, it's amazing to say, wow, it's twice as effective. But it's even more effective than that because the number of, when you look at over time, violent campaigns are becoming less effective, I guess, as governments arm themselves with robots that kill, and nonviolent is becoming more effective. So it's not that it's even staying the same. It's that right now, basically, you can make the claim, I don't know, it's something like this, that, you know, that nonviolent conflict is, say, three times or four times as effective as violent conflict.
Well, now, why do you think that is, Erica? Do you think it has?
Let her address that statement that I just made.
Yeah. So I think that's right. Over time, we're seeing an increase in both the frequency and the success of nonviolent movements, and I think that it's probably moving into close to, in the past maybe 15 years, probably more like three times more effective.
Right. So that's essentially what you're saying. Why do you think that is? Why do you feel that has changed over time? Is it due to the Internet, for instance, communication improving over time to allow folks to focus on the fact that these things are happening, whereas before it would have had to have spread by perhaps word of mouth or, you know, by luck of the draw, actually having the mainstream media focus on it, whereas now anybody can report from anywhere?
Yeah, you know, it's a question that I want to take up in sort of a follow-up study, but it seems to me that people learn. You know, people actually learn over time, and there have been these sort of waves where we've seen a bunch of successful campaigns all at once, like the 1989 campaigns, and then we saw the color revolutions and about the 99 to 2003 era, and so now we're starting to see another wave.
The Arab Spring.
The Arab Spring. And so with each wave, there seems to be some replication of the methods that have succeeded in the previous waves. So you actually do see movements that are sort of copycat.
Erica, hold that thought. We're going to come back here in just a moment and continue this conversation. If you've got a question, Erica Chenoweth is on the line. She's the author of Why Civil Resistance Works, 800-259-9231. This is Free Talk Live.
Hi, I'm Mark Craighead, founder of Crossbreed Holsters. Are you looking for a concealed carry holster? Crossbreed Holsters is the home of the world-famous Super Tuck, the most comfortable concealed carry holster on the market today. Try one out and see how truly discreet and comfortable carrying concealed can be. And find out why we call it the ugliest holster you'll ever love. We are the standard others try to imitate.
Get the original. Get your Super Tuck at CrossbreedHolsters.com. Again, that's CrossbreedHolsters.com.
The Ruger LC9. Compact, powerful, and perfect for personal protection. The LC9 is only slightly larger than the popular Ruger LCP. Features a checkered grip frame to provide a secure and comfortable grip and includes a finger grip extension floor plate. The LC9 also has a dovetailed high visibility 3-dot sight system, blued alloy steel barrel, manual safety, and loaded chamber indicator. The LC9, another innovative American-made product from Ruger. Learn more about the Ruger LC9 at Ruger.com/LC9.
Are you wondering about your retirement portfolio? Are you confident that the financial advisor is experienced enough to combat climbing interest rates, taxes, and inflation? Stop guessing and go to the expert, Robert Chapman of the International Forecaster. When you subscribe to the International Forecaster, you get Robert Chapman's 45 years of experience and concise investment recommendations. Who needs sugar-coated excuses when you can get the cold, hard facts and proven investment leads you can't get anywhere else? For a free introductory copy to Robert Chapman's International Forecaster, subscribe now at theinternationalforecaster.com or call 877-479-8178. Experience the difference. When you subscribe, you can email Robert Chapman directly to obtain investment advice tailored just for you. Don't wait another minute. Subscribe today at theinternationalforecaster.com or call 877-479-8178. That's 877-479-8178.
You've been lied to. Lied to by the Wall Street propaganda machine, the government, and the talking heads in the media. The market is in for another crash. Real estate is already in a double-dip recession, and if you want to keep your hard-earned money safe, this message is for you. My name is Brett Kitchen, and after losing 35% of my money when the market crashed, I said enough is enough. I searched and discovered a way to safely grow my money, participate in potential double-digit gains, but also have my money protected when the crashes come. Plus, it could save you thousands in taxes. I want you to get a free copy of my new book, Safe Money Millionaire, where I share this powerful tool that people like Walt Disney and JCPenney used to safely grow their wealth. Call 1-800-675-1640 right now to get your free copy. Again, that's 1-800-675-1640. I'm giving away a limited number of copies today, so call 1-800-675-1640.
For centuries, silver has been used as a powerful natural antibiotic, and as a listener to this station, you probably already know the benefits of using colloidal silver. With so many websites to choose from, finding a reputable, patriotic company with great products at affordable prices can be a difficult task. Introducing UtopiaSilver.com. UtopiaSilver.com carries the best, most effective, and most affordable colloidal silver and colloidal gold products in the industry. UtopiaSilver.com also carries products to fit your lifestyle, including weight loss, immune system defense, cleanses, herbs, joint and bone care, and much more. First-time customers using promo code GCN50 will receive 50% off all colloidal products. Visit us today at Utopia Silver, that's U-T-O-P-I-A Silver, utopiasilver.com, or call 888-213-4338. That's 888-213-4338. UtopiaSilver.com, taking back America's healthcare one American at a time.
This is Free Talk Live. You can call in and take control at 1-800-259-9231.
This is Free Talk Live. You can bring up anything you want and dial in toll-free at 1-800-259-9231. That's the SACL CAI toll-free line. 800-259-9231. Join us on our website, freetalklive.com. We give you the features for free. So enjoy those on us. Once again, freetalklive.com. And don't forget, Free Talk Live is brought to you by the Free State Project. Get people together who love the ideas of freedom and get active. Seems like a no-brainer, right? Well, unfortunately, it's taken this long to actually start happening. What I mean by that is just for the liberty movement in general. I mean, for years they tried the same old tactics over and over again. Let's run a candidate here and there across the country and get 2% of the vote and try again 4 years later. And after finally spinning their wheels long enough, somebody came up with a great idea to move activists to the same place. And so we're seeing more than just politics now. Not only that, the politics has been successful, but we are seeing what I would say are the beginnings of a pretty exciting civil disobedience and non-cooperation movement, one that is completely peaceful, and that's kind of what we're talking about here. So if that's interesting to you and you love the ideas of freedom, go to freestateproject.org. Learn more about the reason why Mark and I made the move up here from Florida a few years ago. Again, freestateproject.org. So we bring back our special guest here, Erica Chenoweth. She is the author, one of the authors, with Maria Stefan as well, of Why Civil Resistance Works. And that is a book about looking at the last 100+ years or so of civil resistance movements around the world and looking at ones which were violent and ones that weren't. Although I don't know if I would call a violent movement civil in any way, shape, or form. So maybe I'm using the wrong terminology there. Erica, are you still with us?
I'm here.
So civil resistance, nonviolence, major success. Not only that, you pointed out just a moment ago that nonviolent civil resistance is becoming more effective over time, and so is more effective today than it was, say, 50 or 100 years ago. And I think that's a really important aspect of this. And you know, as I speculated before, I would say it has to do with the ability to communicate. For instance, the reason why we're here doing this show tonight is because of the Internet. If it weren't for the Internet, we would not be able to have accomplished what we have with getting our show on the air and into people's ears around the world. And as a result of that, people are moving to New Hampshire as part of the Free State Project. And we actually have nonviolent civil disobedience and non-cooperation going on a regular basis up here. And more and more people are coming to join in. And I would imagine numbers are a fairly important part in all this as well. I don't know if you focused on that in your books. I haven't read it. But yeah. You know, are larger movements more effective than smaller ones? Seems like a no-brainer, right?
Yeah, that actually is one of the main findings in the book, which is that part of the reason why nonviolent movements are so much more successful is because they can just get more people involved. Most people, no matter how much they care about an issue, are not going to be willing to kill or die for it. I mean, a lot of people are, but not enough to really generate a mass movement that can really, really upset and upend the status quo. So if a movement commits itself to nonviolent means, people can participate in all sorts of low-risk ways. For instance, they can just stay at home from work. You know, a lot of cases, that in itself is an exercise in nonviolent civil disobedience. And you know, a lot of people will find that an appealing way to participate. So one of our main findings is that the bigger the movement, the more likely it is to succeed, and the more the campaign commits itself to nonviolent resistance, the less barriers people have to overcome to participate in it.
Now, there have to be some sort of factors that make nonviolent civil resistance fail, too. You said that I think 1 out of 4 of the nonviolent civil resistance campaigns, which is pretty good numbers, 1 out of 4 fail. That's you know, 75%, some level of success. What are the sort of causal factors for failure?
I think one of the biggest things is that they will tend to over-concentrate their methods into a single technique. So let's take, for example, the Burmese case, which we talk about in the book. What they did, the pro-democracy movement there in 1988, they relied quite a bit on concentrated protests. Tiananmen Square was the same way in China. And so what they were doing is sort of going to the same square over and over and over again and having bigger and bigger protests. Well, that's fine, but it's also extremely predictable, and it kind of ends up making the movement a bunch of sitting ducks. So movements that succeed tend to have a high degree of what we would call tactical innovation, which means that they are constantly switching up the methods that they're using. The Iranian Revolution in the late 70s, which did not bring about a democratic regime but did overthrow the Shah of Iran nonetheless, they really did switch up their tactics. So they have what we call methods of concentration, where they're doing these really high-profile protests and rallies, but then they also had stay-at-homes and go-slows and stay-aways, which is when people literally just stayed in their houses for a week. And that in itself slowed down the economy and really, in a way, brought the Shah's regime to its knees. And these are very low-risk actions. It's very difficult to repress people when they're literally just staying inside their homes.
Now, so predictability, clearly, that makes perfectly good sense. Did you call Tiananmen Square a failure? Because, I mean, to some extent, I mean, China is a different place than it was when those protests were occurring, right?
Yeah, and I'd say that it definitely is. It's certainly undergone a number of reforms, but I wouldn't say that pro-democracy movement was necessarily the most important factor in that they brought about that outcome, and they were repressed without achieving their stated goals, and sort of ended without achieving their stated goals. And we try to use a very high threshold of success, and in part because we don't want people to say, well, you're saying that, it's very easy for a nonviolent movement to succeed because, all of your successes are actually not really successes. They're just like they got significant concessions or whatever. So our standard is they have to achieve their stated goals, which is pretty difficult to do.
Well, this is this is sort of the academics are arguing about the minutia, right? But I mean, to some extent, to me, if Tiananmen Square is a failure, then a success must be great, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, because to me, it seemed like a success to me, and I would hate to.
It's certainly one of the most memorable ones.
I mean, the guy standing in front of those three tanks is really something.
So, Erica, go ahead.
Well, yeah, I mean, any time that it brings some kind of international attention and solidarity and that sort of thing to a struggle, there is a. I would call it a tactical success, right? So that they had a number of effective methods, but they didn't achieve their ultimate stated goals, which is they wanted to completely kind of upend the Communist Party of China and then turn it into something else. So even though that they did bring awareness and it did change the landscape, we're using a very strict threshold of full success.
And, I mean, one might be able to say then that the Egyptian conflict doesn't look like it's going to be a success then either, because although the military has taken control and the government of, is out of there.
Mubarak.
Yeah, Mubarak. The fact is that it's really not much better than it was before. It's sort of political musical chairs. They're moving folks around in there. I hope that it turns out well for them. I've got some more questions about sort of what defines success and failure and those kind of things. Can you stick with us?
Sure.
All right, more with Erica Chenoweth. She is one of the authors of Why Civil Resistance Works, 800-259-9231. We're talking about nonviolent, of course, peaceful. 800-259-9231. If you've got a question for Erica, more coming up. It's Free Talk Live.
You know that drinking pure, high alkaline water is one of the most important factors in maintaining high energy and vibrant health, and most experts agree that the water you drink should be at a pH level of 8 or higher. AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops, available only at AlkaVision.com, combine a unique formula of most alkaline minerals available. AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops alkalize your water, ridding the body of harmful toxins and acid, helping you to regain your energy and health. Alkalizing your water by simply adding 10 drops of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops helps the body to rid itself of acidic waste, increases oxygen, and raises the pH of your body to optimal levels. And bacteria and viruses cannot survive in an alkaline high pH environment. Order your bottle of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops for only $29.95 at AlkaVision.com. That's AlkaVision.com. Or call 269-409-1776. 269-409-1776. Alkalize your body. Supercharge your health at AlkaVision.com.
If you owe money to the IRS, you can't make the problem go away by yourself. But with the help of Dan Pilla, you can get your problem solved once and for all.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. For 30 years, I've helped thousands of people solve their tax debt problem, and I can help you solve yours too. We take a very simple but proven three-step approach to solving your problem. First, we stabilize IRS collection actions so you don't have to worry about the IRS seizing your bank account or paycheck. Next, we build a comprehensive plan to get your tax debt reduced to the fullest extent possible, sometimes even completely eliminated. And finally, we work with you every step of the way to get your problem solved once and for all. Call us for a free consultation. Call 1-800-346-6829. We'll work together to get your problem solved guaranteed.
Dan Pilla has been protecting taxpayers from the IRS for three decades, and he can help you too. Call us today at 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
HempUSA.org brings you pure Camu Berry Powder. This revolutionary powder contains 50 times the vitamin C of an orange, mixes with any juice or liquid, has 227 servings per container, and is made from naturally grown Camu berries, not chemically produced in a laboratory. Order Camu Berry Powder today. Call 908-691-2608 or visit HempUSA.org and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. HempUSA.org has moved and expanded its operations for faster worldwide shipping. Our product line has grown from 5 to nearly 100 items in less than 5 years. Our food is grown naturally, always chemical-free, not found in stores. Great for daily intake and perfect for your emergency storage shelter. Call 908-691-2608 or visit HempUSA.org and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you.
Will I have garlic breath after I take Ali-C?
We get that question all the time about the world's best garlic extract, Ali-C. And the answer is, Ali-C contains stabilized allicin, nature's antimicrobial agent, and the active ingredient in crushed garlic, but will not give you garlic breath. Scientifically proven in double-blind studies, using low doses of allicin greatly reduces the number, severity, and duration of common colds. Our powerful Ali-C contains 300 milligrams of stabilized allicin. Just one tablet of Ali-C is equivalent to 40 garlic cloves. It's effective against asthma, MRSA, bacterial, fungal, and viral infections, and helps lower high blood pressure and high cholesterol. Plus, it's a natural mosquito repellent. Boost resistance to infection with nature's best garlic extract, Ali-C. For more information and to order Ali-C, call 877-888-7126 or go to garlichealthproducts.com. That's 877-888-7126 or garlichealthproducts.com. Fight back with Ali-C.
This is Free Talk Live. You can call in and take control at 1-800-259-9231.
Talk Live. You can bring us anything you want. Dial in toll free at 800-259-9231. That's the SACL CAI toll free line. 1-800-259-9231. You can join us on our website at freetalklive.com, and we give you the features there free. So enjoy those on us. Once again, freetalklive.com. We go back to special guests that we have on the line here tonight, Erica Chenoweth. She is one of the authors of Why Civil Resistance Works. We're going to bring her back. But first,
if you have a company that needs to try something new in the area of accounts receivable, SACL CAI is a company that handles accounts receivable. They do collections, early out billing, they purchase charged off receivables. The principal over there, Jason Osborne, big supporter of Free Talk Live, big supporter of Liberty, big supporter of nonviolent civil resistance. So, you know, go check them out at freetalklive.com. It's the top banner on the right-hand side of the page.
Right, and we've got Erica with us here, generously giving us some more of her time here tonight. If you've got a question, would you mind taking a call if we got one for you, Erica? Would that be all right?
Sure, that would be fine.
800-259-9231. Now, Mark, we've been talking about why it is that nonviolent civil resistance movements are far more effective than violent resistance, which I would not consider civil, and significantly more so. It on the average over the last 100 years, they're twice as effective. But, Erica, you said that recently they've been perhaps three times as effective. And, of course, larger movements that are more varied in their techniques are also more effective as well. So, Mark, you had some follow-up questions.
Yeah, so, you know, sort of, I think that it's normal for humans to say, well, you know, these people, this dictator is being violent towards us, let's be violent towards him. So what do you say to sort of that it is the sort of predictable and normal behavior for people to want violent revolution?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I've been reading a lot about when people first started using violence in an organized fashion, and it turns out that I think it's a myth that it comes really easily to us. I was reading some anthropological research that basically said that humans didn't really start using violence until they became less nomadic and started putting stakes in the ground and defending their own space.
Makes sense.
And so it actually is easier for us to confront each other using nonviolent resistance. But I don't know, maybe there's something that socialized us into thinking that violence is the normal reaction to violence. But it actually is more natural for us to confront it using creative nonviolent tactics.
I would say you're right. I mean, people have been socialized to think that. They're brought up in this system that is inherently violent, and in a lot of cases that is teaching people that if you want to solve a problem, well, you know, just turn to the government and they'll pass a law and they'll use violence on peaceful people.
And if you don't like that law, do the same thing that the government will do. Carry a gun on your hip and shoot somebody if they don't like it.
Right. I mean, there's this kind of this popular history of violence as well, where when you're going to history class, it's all about wars and
that
it's all about, violence and, you know,
Alexander the Great's called great because he killed a lot of people.
Yeah, and of course, I don't agree that's great at all, but that's the perspective that is essentially pushed on at least people in this country. By the government school system. I think that's really dangerous because it leads people down the road. And, of course, then you also have parents who use violence on more of an individual basis with their kids, which is also teaching kids, if there's a problem with a kid, you just beat it or, spank it, and that'll solve the problem. Of course, anybody that's looked into spanking knows that's, again, teaching the wrong lesson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's funny because sometimes I'll talk to activists and I'll say, what is it? Are you a parent? And what is it that makes you blindingly angry when your child does it? And they'll say, when they go totally limp and they don't allow you to move them. and that's a form of nonviolent resistance. They're just not obeying, and it has the capacity to make adults blindingly angry, and that's basically what we're talking about.
It reminds me of the LOL cat on the internet, that the civil disobedience cat shall not be moved. He's going to be drugged by the leash. Did you see this?
I've seen it.
No, I didn't.
You need to get on the internet, Eric.
That's very good. There's a lot of LOL cats out there.
They are darn entertaining. Now, I've got a couple of, I guess, harder questions about sort of civil resistance. Many people, it seems like, so in Martin Luther King, there's the Black Panthers. With Gandhi, there was actually some, there was some violence going on along with Gandhi. These are the two civil disobedience.
But they weren't involved in those.
They weren't. But at the same time, violence was occurring where groups took desperate different groups wanted similar things, and some were using nonviolence, and some were using violence at the same time, at the same place, to achieve similar goals. How does your study address this, and what do you have to say to people that sort of say, oh, well, you've got to have violence and nonviolence, and they work together?
Yeah, so that was one of the big critiques that came up early on. And so one of my colleagues, Kurt Schock, who's a professor at Rutgers, and I started a study about what we call that radical flank problem, which is, what happens when you have the precise scenario that you just talked about. What we find is that having a violent movement that exists simultaneously to a nonviolent one certainly does never help the nonviolent movement succeed. We couldn't find any cases when we did the statistical analysis where it improved the odds of success.
Okay.
And in fact, what we found is that it could hurt it. And the reason is because of what I mentioned about the importance of participation. People are much less willing to risk their lives and families' lives and neighbors' lives if they think that participation in a nonviolent campaign is going to mean, no matter what, they're going to be labeled as a terrorist or whatever by the government that they're opposing. And it's much more likely that kind of a thing will happen if there's a simultaneous violent movement. It basically calls forth the government's ability to, justify all kinds of horrible repression, and nobody wants to be part of that, right? So
Makes sense.
End up having these radical flanks that are really undermining the odds of success. At the same time, nonviolent movements can succeed despite the presence of violent movements. We've seen that in the Philippines. We saw it in Iran. We've seen it in Egypt and elsewhere. So I think that it's still a possibility, but that they don't help and they could hurt. That's kind of the bottom line.
So even the right will still use the Black Panthers as this sort of scare tactic, 30 or 40 years later after they've essentially gone away. So, I think that's true, that they can vilify. The people don't want to be vilified. They don't want to be painted as dangerous. And
Does history remember, right? I mean, you look back, who were those violent people associated with Gandhi? I don't know. Who were the violent people associated with Martin?
I just named them.
I'm sorry, with Gandhi?
With Martin Luther King. I could look it up with Gandhi. I don't know what their names are, but I'm sure you could find it. I don't know. History tends to remember whoever's successful, I would say, is the case. There's a couple of other sort of questions here. What we've seen, it seems, in recent history is that sort of urban warfare, urban terroristic guerrilla warfare, is more successful against governments. I.e. Iraq, i.e. I don't know if Afghanistan. Afghanistan's really not a particularly good example of this, but there have been some reasonably good examples of urban guerrilla warfare where they've staved off a much larger attacker. What do you say to people that say, "Oh, we just got to fight the government in the streets"?
Yeah, actually, the example a lot of people bring up is Algeria, the Algeria independence movement that kicked France out, basically.
Okay.
And usually what I would say to that is a couple of things. First of all, we do see that when there's an occupation by a democratic country, those tend to not go well for the democratic country. Usually the indigenous population throws them out, whether they do that by nonviolent means or violent ones.
Gotcha.
So I think that you're going to have a much higher rate of success for violent insurgencies when they're facing democracies that are occupying their country from a foreign place. But in general, what I haven't seen is a compelling argument that where these violent insurgencies have worked, that nonviolent insurrections couldn't have worked. What I mean by that is I don't see compelling evidence to show that the violence was necessary to achieve that outcome.
So,
right? So let's say that in a hypothetical that the Algerian independence movement had been completely nonviolent, we may have seen the exact same outcome.
Gotcha.
Interesting.
Now, if people want to get your book, just real quick, I want to be able to plug it. They would go to, I have the address here, cup.columbia.edu. Is that correct?
Yes, just go to Columbia University Press's website and they can get a 30% discount at checkout if they enter the code
Erica,
WY.
Can you stick around for one more segment? I apologize.
Give me the code.
All right, hang on. We're going to bring that code back here in just a moment. This is Free Talk Live.
Are you a cigarette smoker? I was too for many years. You know that crap's gonna kill you, right? There's a healthier option. 22,000 times healthier. Vaporsmiths.com. A pack-a-day smoker will save $120 a month, and it tastes better. No more ashtray mouth. No smell. No secondhand smoke. You can use it just about anywhere. Free shipping on orders over $60, and a free starter kit with the purchase of 40 cartomizers with coupon code FTL. Call 855-2-GET-VAPOR, or go to Vaporsmiths.com.
You know the U.S. dollar is devaluing. You can see it happening every day. You know a new currency will take over at some point. Wouldn't you like to be in on the ground floor? Bitcoins. They're a decentralized, anonymous internet currency. They're free to use, free to accept, and free from inflation forever. You can use them anywhere in the world, and their value seems only to be increasing. Find out more at weusecoins.org. Don't be kicking yourself in the pants in a month. Your dollars are going down. Bitcoins are going up. Weusecoins.org.
Question. Can functional magnetic resonance imaging be used to read our minds? Author Jose Collazo answers yes in his two new books, America's New Slavery. For more than 13 years, author Jose Collazo has been trying to prove that the U.S. government has the capacity to read a person's thoughts with a revolutionary technology known as fMRI, functional magnetic resonance imaging, and there is proof that it exists. America's New Slavery explores this technology and its many possible applications in national security. Who has access to it? How is it being used? Does America's salvation rest in this technology? These and many other questions are answered in America's New Slavery, the new books by Jose Collazo, available on BN.com, Amazon.com, and Borders.com. America's New Slavery. All Americans should be concerned.
Hi, I'm Mark Craighead, founder of Crossbreed Holsters. I designed our top-selling holster, the Super Tuck Deluxe, to solve the problems of being poked, pinched, and gouged while carrying concealed. The Super Tuck Deluxe is the most comfortable, most concealable holster on the market today. We offer a 2-week free trial and a lifetime warranty.
Visit us at crossbreedholsters.com. Don't forget, crossbreedholsters.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
If you're concerned about radiation poisoning from Japan in the air, water, or food and can't find potassium iodide, go to RestoreYourHealthNow.com and choose Liquid Zeolite. Liquid Zeolite is hands down the best product to remove radiation from your body and safely removes toxins, heavy metals, boosts energy levels, and promotes a strong immune system. For fatigue, muscle weakness, headaches, memory loss, influenza, joint pain, or toxic radiation poisoning, use Liquid Zeolite from RestoreYourHealthNow.com. Liquid Zeolite is so powerful it was used to clean up contamination in Chernobyl, yet so gentle you won't even know you're taking it. Liquid Zeolite comes with a money-back guarantee but is only available at RestoreYourHealthNow.com. Learn how to get free bottles of Liquid Zeolite at RestoreYourHealthNow.com. That's RestoreYourHealthNow.com or call 800-880-9976. Call 800-880-9976 today and learn how to get free bottles of Liquid Zeolite.
This is Free Talk Live. You can call in and take control at 1-800-259-9231.
This is Free Talk Live. Bring up what you want. Dial in toll-free at 800-259-9231. That's the SACL CAI toll-free line. We're talking about nonviolent civil resistance. This is being called in Why Civil Resistance Works, a book by Erica Chenoweth and Maria Steffen. We actually have Erica with us here. We're going to continue that interview in a moment. If you've got a question for her, 800-259-9231 is the number. You can also visit us online at freetalklive.com. Now, on our website, you'll see that we give you all the features there completely free. So head on over there and enjoy those on us. If you like the show and you want to help support Free Talk Live, become an amplifier for as little as $3 per month. You can go to amp.freetalklive.com, use any major credit card via PayPal, or use Visa or MasterCard right on our website, and help Free Talk Live get on more radio stations across the country, bring more internet listeners on board, and expose people to the ideas of freedom. So once again, amp.freetalklive.com, and you'll get perks too, like access to the AMP-only call-in lines, the AMP-only forum and podcast, and more. Once again, that's amp.freetalklive.com. Now, when we left Erica during that last break, we're about ready to get a discount code from her to order this book. Now, regular price, if you were to go to Amazon, for instance, through our Amazon link at shop.freetalklive.com, you'd get it for about $30, $29 or something like that. But on your
website, it looks like a $29 book to me. I mean, this is the kind of
hardcover.
Yeah, that's what you'd pay in a store. I mean, the pages are nice, and I'm holding it in my hand here,
I love the logo too, by the way, with the fist with the peace
looking
sign. It's a fist with a peace sign. It's great stuff. Can we borrow that, Erica?
You can talk to the publisher about that.
Okay. So give us a discount code. Give us instructions on how our listeners can get a price break.
Sure. If they just go to Columbia University Press's website and look for Why Civil Resistance Works, all they need to do is enter the discount code WHYCH at checkout, and they'll get a 30% discount.
WHYCH at the checkout.
Right.
And
right.
Now,
and
you can just go to cup.columbia.edu, and you're right on the front page. We've already checked this out this evening. So people can just go there and buy the book, and you get a 30% discount with coupon code
WHYCH.
Yeah, I'm not going to be able to read that upside down. Sorry.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, one more question I have for you, Erica. You know, some people will claim that, you know, in this new world, and you've sort of answered this previously, but I think it bears repeating on this particular one. In this new world, all you have to do to have your little insurrection work is to get a few teenagers to wrap themselves in dynamite and to run off towards the infidel or whatever, and then that works because, you know, suicide campaigns work. What do you have to say to that?
You know, I haven't seen very much compelling evidence to show that they work to achieve the ultimate outcomes that they want. They definitely work to get a lot of attention. They work to scare a lot of people. They may work to change how people view the other side and things like that. But they aren't very good at developing constructive solutions to problems. And I think, you know, the thing about civil resistance is that I think it's cut short before it can really play out and work a lot of the time because people are either impatient or they can't get enough people on board with their idea to see that it's going to work. And so I think what I'm hoping for is to sort of change the conventional wisdom about what types of things that ordinary civilians can do to change conditions that are intolerable for them. And the main point we're trying to make here is that teenagers or whomever, they do not have to strap dynamite on themselves and run into, you know, the opposite side and blow themselves up. That this is a very powerful force for change in the world. It's becoming more powerful as a force for change and is probably, you know, eventually going to be the most important force for change in the world. And so they just don't need to do that. And I'm hoping to really change the conventional wisdom about that.
What kind of advice do you have for people that might be considering using some kind of civil resistance to get some kind of change that they want, you know, someplace?
You know, there are a lot of resources available to activists and other, you know, ordinary citizens. The Internet, as you said, has made a lot of that accessible to people. And there are a few places I'd recommend in particular. The Albert Einstein Institution is a small organization where Gene Sharp, who's kind of the main theoretician of the use of nonviolent direct action, works. He's got a number of pamphlets available for free download that are very useful. The International Center on Nonviolent Conflict is an organization in Washington whose sole purpose is to promote knowledge about nonviolent conflict, and they have a number of resources as well and events. So I'd start there, and then just using simple Google searches, one can find quite a lot of information about how to plan and develop a strategy that works.
You know, we are here, as I mentioned, in New Hampshire as part of the Free State Project, a movement of a bunch of liberty-minded folks getting together and getting active in various different ways. And it's interesting kind of comparing what's happened thus far in this movement with what you're saying. One of the critiques up here of the movement, the civil disobedience side of it and the non-cooperation side of it, has been that it hasn't been organized enough. And I think that's one of the strengths of it to some extent, because having a decentralized movement is important to me, because then there's nobody who's in charge. There's nobody who they can kind of pick off at the top and decimate a movement. It's all just being done, you know, at the whim of those who are interested in doing whatever it is they want to do. They may plan something on their own, but there's no central committee or whatever that's handing down edicts. Do you feel like that's a strength?
Yeah, I do think it's a strength. The key is that it's a really difficult balance to have a decentralized movement that also has unity and coherence. And so that's sort of the key, is that, you know, a campaign isn't going to work just because it has a ton of nonviolent protesters. There has to actually be strategy involved, and it has to be organized in a way, not organized in a hierarchy, but coherent, you know, and so that one kind of tactic follows another and that there's an overarching strategic aim. And that sort of thing can be done in a leaderless resistance sort of way, but it still has to be done.
Have you ever done it? Have you ever done civil disobedience or non-cooperation in your personal life?
I'm more of an astronaut than I'm more of an astronomer than an astronaut. I'll put it that way. I've watched a lot of it. I've been present to watch a lot of it. But
can you give me an example of one that you were present for?
I was in the UK and I was doing some research on protest movements there, and so I was looking at watching some immigrant groups protesting the parliament about what they saw as infringements on their rights and that sort of thing. And so, you know, I've sort of I'm very curious about it. I look at, I'm very fascinated by animal rights movements and things like that, so I'll follow some of their activities. But no, I'm not myself very much of an activist. I'm more just kind of interested in watching.
How successful are these things in democracies? Most of the examples, there's dramatic examples that exist in dictatorships. You know, people die and that kind of thing. How successful are these in democracies? Are they more, less, or equally successful?
I think one of the ironies is they tend to be less successful, the nonviolent ones. And the reason I think is because there's, it's almost like more apathy in democracies. People just think that because they can vote, they'll express themselves that way. And so it doesn't come to them as easily to use other tactics of nonviolent protest. So I think that they happen in democracies, but they peter out much more quickly. And maybe, you know, in authoritarian regimes, it's so intolerable to live under that level of oppression that people have less of a tough time.
That's what we've seen, is that people have to be, they have to, in many cases, be woken up by some sort of strike of violence by the people calling themselves the state close to home before they'll really start to speak out, even, let alone do something. And one of the things that I've always encouraged on this show is if you are seeing something that you think is awful, then the more that you can say no, the better. As far as tyrants and, you know, little tyrants, sometimes, you know, cities have their little tyrants too, or a judge, for instance. We just had a judge put a guy in jail for over 150 days for handing out some information at court, and it's just crazy stuff. The more people say no, the better off we'll all be, but they have to be willing to take that step. And I think you're absolutely right. People in a lot of these, you know, westernized democracies are fat and they're happy and they're lazy and apathetic as a result of that. And it's unfortunate that they have to have violence strike close in order to take action. I wish we're out of time for today, but Erica, thanks for coming on tonight. If people want to get your book, they can go to cup.columbia.edu and use the discount code WHYCH to save 30%.
Great.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming on the show tonight, Erica. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Take care.
More coming up here. Hour 2's next. 800-259-9231. More about what's going on in Orlando coming up. Free Talk Live.
Amdro Kills Ants presents The Household Ant Requiem.
If you find yourself shrieking in disgust because ants are invading the harmony of your clean kitchen and home, you need Amdro Kills Ants bait stations and sakes inside and outside your house. Amdro Kills Ants is a bait ants love, so they eat it and die. And that's a tune that'll keep your house humming. Find Amdro Kills Ants' entire line of products at a Lowe's near you.
This Your Family Today tip is brought to you by Nestle Pure Life Water, helping you drink better and live better by providing a zero-calorie alternative to sugary drinks. Visit us at nestle-purelife.us. When kids are playing, they often don't want to stop to keep hydrated, so send them out with a bottle of water and encourage them to take frequent drink breaks or call them inside for a quick sip. For more tips like these, visit us at parenthood.com/yourfamilytoday.